Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
We are getting set to talk to a Texas legend. That's right. We have another big interview straight ahead this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. It is a name that is legendary with the Dallas Cowboys organization, as he had a 14-year career with the Cowboys. He was named All-Pro 7 times and played in 11 All-Star games. He, of course, was known as Mr. Cowboy, and in 1975 was honored with inscribing his name into the Ring of Honor. In fact, he was the very first player to receive this. It is a true pleasure to welcome to our show for the very first time. We want to give a warm Texas welcome to Mr. Bob Lilly, of course, former Dallas Cowboy and NFL Hall of Famer. Thank you, Bob, for joining us this weekend.
Thank you, Elisa. It's my pleasure.
We are certainly looking forward to reliving so many of your big moments and memories with the Cowboys and, of course, right here in Fort Worth at TCU. But first, let's start off by talking about the one thing that does bring you back to the Metroplex and specifically to Fort Worth every single year, and that is your celebrity golf tournament, your partnership, of course, with FCA. You and Scott Murray, it's something that you guys always look forward to, and it's a big part of what you do.
It really is. I thoroughly enjoy that. That's something that I was not involved in college. In fact, I'm not sure we had that FCA at TCU while I was there. But anyway, when I got to the Cowboys, Coach Landry became involved with FCA, and then he talked to us about it a lot, and he got a lot of us to go and speak to some of the young people that he was speaking to and visit with them. And anyway, just sort of many of us got involved, and Scott and I have hosted this tournament Fort Worth. I know I've been involved in it since Coach Wacker was there, so I think this was my 27th or 28th year this past month. And Scott's been with me for probably 14 or 15 years, and we thoroughly enjoy it. I host the one in San Antonio as well, FCA Golf Tournament Fundraiser is what it really is. And then I go, my son's on the board in Dallas, so I go to that one because he makes me. Not that I'm a great golfer. No, I enjoy going to that one. I see a lot of my old teammates there.
And, of course, it was very successful. This year it was actually held at Trophy Club. In the years past, it's been held at Mira Vista. But it's interesting, you bring up a great point, Bob. You talk about the legendary coach, Tom Landry. FCA was very close to his heart. It was a huge organization, a philanthropy that he was such a big part of. Are you saying he was the inspiration to get involved in this?
He was certainly my inspiration. And it turned out, I think, that Coach Landry was a huge fundraiser, and that's really kind of what happened. When I first got involved in FCA, I thought my role would be going out and speaking to, coaches and players and so forth, and it did. To a certain extent, that did happen. But mainly what ended up happening is the fact that the people that run these FCA districts, they have to earn their own way. They have no, there's no income from FCA. They have to earn it themselves. And so they do this by golf tournaments, and they have banquets, and they have people, speakers and various things. And I've done some of that. But the golf tournament is an integral part because it does furnish probably 30-40% of their budget. And the Dallas one, Coach Landry, they still call it the Coach Landry FCA Golf Tournament.
You were listening to the familiar voice, Bob Lilly, former Dallas Cowboy, NFL Hall of Famer. We are doing his audio biography this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We do want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. I know we'll get lots of feedback, lots of emails, and so you can direct those to info@eradiosports.com. We also have to quickly pause and recognize our premier corporate sponsor and partner. That's the friends and folks at Western Company of Texas, and they have a brand new website. That's wct.us.com, a new look and a new location. Be sure and check that out. As we are on having this conversation, talking about the lasting impact Tom Landry had on you, we got to provide a little bit of history for our listeners. You were the first draft choice of, at that time, the new Dallas Cowboys football team in 1961. Coach Tom Landry, of course, was only 36 years of age when he became the head coach. Bob Lilly, what were your first thoughts upon meeting him and that impression?
Well, the first thing that happened was we had a meeting. Most of the rookies came in for it. It was held at Burnett Park over in Dallas, which is no longer there. It was a condemned baseball park, I found out later. Anyway, I had these visions from Mickey Mantle's interview after the World Series the year before. Him in his locker with his name on it, you know, Mickey Mantle. I could picture myself, and he had a chair. He was sitting in the chair with a big cigar in his mouth, and I thought, boy, that must be really the life. So anyway, I got an invitation to come over in June to the stadium and have an introduction by Coach Landry. He was going to introduce all of us rookies and talk to us a little bit about his priorities and so forth. Anyway, I got in my car, and I went kept looking for a nice place. You know, this place looked kind of run down. So finally, I decided I better go check. I'm running late, so I go in, and I'm looking for the door. There's no door. It's just a big opening under the stadium. Went in, and I was looking for the locker room, and the lockers were the little size that you have in the high schools, you know, the little ones you put your books in. And I noticed the players had hung their uniforms up on the pipes, and I found out later that was because the rats came in there at night and ate anything with sweat on it, like leather, your leather shoes, your inside of your helmet,
wow,
things like that. Anyway, I finally found the room, and it was real dark and dingy and had the old World War II green lights, green metal lights, and Coach Landry was in there, and he said, "Welcome, Bob." He said, "By the way, when we go to training camp, you will be in your seat when I call the roll. Otherwise, you get fined $50, and it doubles every time." That was my introduction. And then during the course of his explaining to us the cowboy philosophy and all that, he said, "Here's my personal life." He said, I put God first, and he said, "My family comes second, and football is third." And I thought, he's got his priorities backwards. I thought he should have football up there first, and then he could have God second or his family, you know. Anyway, it turned out that he was absolutely right. And every year he told the rookies the same thing every year when we went to training camp. They all said, "Did he tell you this?" And yep, he sure did, and he was right.
So were you skeptical at first as far as here was a guy saying, you know, he was committed to doing the right thing, a man of integrity, as you'd said, putting God, family, football, and you were saying perhaps that was all out of order, but he never had a meltdown. I mean, he truly did was a man that honored his beliefs, and I mean, it sounds cliche, but he talked the talk, he walked the walk.
He sure did, and he had another, when he called you in sometimes, he always said, you don't ever want to lie. Said, "I never lie. I never tell a lie." And he said, "The reason I don't is because I don't want to have to remember it." And he said, "When I talk to people, I tell exactly what I think." And he said, "That's sometimes you all probably get the wrong idea. You think I'm chewing you out." But he said, "Really, I'm just telling you what I'm thinking." And he said, "Really, it's to help you and to coach you." And so, and you know, it was little things, but he was very bright. I mean, he had a little speech impediment that most people don't know about, but. Anyway, it was, you know, it sort of deflected the fact that he was so brilliant, and he would say he would stumble around with words sometimes, but, you know, just the things he did. He did things like set the goals, he set team goals, offensive goals, defensive goals, personal goals for everybody on the team, yards per carry, yards per catch. Defense allows only 17 points. Offense has to score 24 points or more. That was our goal. That was our regular standard goal. And we allowed so many yards per catch. We allowed so many yards per run. And, you know, it was funny how it worked out. It started out when I was a rookie, we didn't have a very good team. And it started by 63, our defense was really taking shape, and we were starting to accomplish some of those goals. And he used to tell us, he said, "I could put you in an 11-man line. If you believed in it, it'll work." He said, "But the flex defense is far ahead of anything out there right now." And he said, "The multiple offense is coming. It's a coming thing." He said, "It'll carry us into the 80s. And it's funny, everybody today, they don't play the flex particularly, but they play multiple offense. It's you know, everybody's moving around all the time. They weren't doing that back then. So he was so farsighted. I mean, he just had a vision, and he and Coach Lombardi had coached together in New York as the offense. He was Coach Lombardi was the offensive head coach.
And that's right.
Landry was a defensive head coach, and it's interesting how their philosophies were kind of opposite as far as the way they did their team, but both teams believed in what they were doing, and they were both successful. But both of them were pretty disciplinarian. I mean, we didn't have any leeway. We had curfews when we were training camp, and they checked our bed, they checked our rooms every night, and the fine if you were out was $500, and it doubled if you were out again. So anyway, that's the way Coach Landry was, but he was very fair. Everybody, he treated everybody the same, and he was very fair. And he gave a lot of people extra time to get their lives straightened out. Some of them did. Some of them went on their way.
Bob Lilly is with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. You bring up a great story talking about the fact that with the Giants, he had the opportunity to coach right alongside Vince Lombardi. Tom Landry, though, he changed the nature of pass coverage forever. Can you talk a little bit more about some of the X's and O's?
Well, yeah, Coach Landry, the pass coverage is, I think, for a long period of time. I mean, when I went into the league, the passing game was about 35% and the running game was about 65%. So our philosophy, his philosophy, basically, it was ours after we learned it. But Coach Landry's philosophy was to stop the run and force them into a passing situation, and then you could get a good pass rush. And he also believed in man-to-man coverage. When he came to the Cowboys, he did not really believe zone. He didn't like zone coverage. He felt that a person should be able to cover man-to-man. As times changed, we started getting receivers that were faster and faster. Then we did change. We changed into a combination of man-to-man coverage and a zone coverage, which they called it rolling. And I'm not sure what they meant, because I never did get to watch him except in the game films, and I was generally watching myself to make sure he wasn't going to chew me out. But anyway, he did. That's when it changed. And Bob Hayes actually changed. Changed the game further by his enormous speed, and the guys started to bump and run. They would bump him, and then the next guy would start bumping him. They'd just put two guys on him and not let him get downfield, although he learned to do it anyway. But there weren't too many Bob Hayeses out there. You know, there weren't too many people that fast. But we had a defense where we bumped them, and then we had a roll where the safeties would roll one way or the other, depending on the receivers. So our defense was the flex defense, and our pass defense was a little bit different. We didn't line up the same, and we did a lot of stunning, and our secondary had a lot of calls to make. Leroy had a lot of responsibility to call plays, and then our strong safety was the same way. They had to call when the formation changed. We knew we were one of the first teams that were computerized on defense. Every game plan had every play that they ran in the last five games, especially against 4-3 defenses, which we played. And so we had tests every Friday on the tendencies of the team we were going to play and what they like to do and what they like to do, you know, at what on their end of the field, what they would like to do and what they like to do before halftime or before the end of the game or when they were on the, you know, going in the red zone to try to score. So everything, we knew all their tendencies, and we had tests on that, and we had to name the plays, and we had to name who they threw to, who they ran with, what they ran. All that had to do with hash marks, which side of the field they were on, if they were in the middle of the field, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Tom Landry certainly had you guys ahead of his time. Bob Lilly is Mr. Cowboy, the humble man from Throckmorton, Texan, also called perhaps the greatest defensive tackle in NFL history. We're going to talk some more about that. It is interesting, Bob. Just a few weeks back, we had the legendary coach Dan Reeves on our program, and he shared a little bit about as far as his relationship with Tom Landry, the impact that he had. I like the fact he talked about just how detail-oriented he was. He was very organized. He was impeccable with his game preparation. Momentarily, we're talking a little bit about that. Can you share some more? Because those were great, even life principles that carried over to life after football.
Yeah, they did. That for all of us, the goals that I was talking about earlier, they were posted on the walls. We had these kind of plastic, I guess you call them a chalkboard, but we used some kind of paint that would wipe off. But we kept our goals, and it was down to the man. I mean, it was the team goals and. And then it was defensive goals, offensive goals, and then it was yard per run, and then it was on defense. It was how many yards we allow per pass, how many, so forth and so on. And we had red and blue ink. And so when you started falling, 2 weeks of falling in a category, that meant we stayed after practice and practiced on that specific thing for about 15 minutes. And it was incredible because you could actually watch the red ink disappear over the next week or so. You don't have a lot of time in a 14-game season to change things, but we were able to do it within about 3 weeks if we had a tendency that was bad. The other thing was everything was detailed, and everyone had tests on their game plan, their particular what they had to describe the player that they were, you know, head up with, and we had to know all the plays that we had to be able to draw them up and talk about the plays and talk about the strengths of their offense and the strengths against our 4-3 and the strengths against the flex defense. And so it was very, very intricate. And the quarterbacks were even more involved. They had meetings, couple-hour meetings extra. We usually had a 2-hour meeting, and quarterbacks would always have a morning meeting for about 2 hours before we had our general meetings. So they got gleaned a lot more detail. And then the coaches stayed. They worked 16-hour days. And Dan Reeves was a teammate, but later a coach while I was there. And of course, Mike Ditka came and played tight end for us, but he also became a player coach. And they said, man, you think this is rough? You ought to try coaching.
Yeah, those 16-hour days, that is for sure a long day. But it certainly obviously paid off, because in 72, you guys won the Super Bowl and beat those Miami Dolphins.
Well, we did, and we watched, I imagine we had 10 or 12 films on them from that year, the year we played them. And they looked invincible, really. They were a team that was still running about 65% of the time, because they had Zonka Kick and Mercury Morris. And they had Paul Warfield at the wide receiver, which is a pretty good receiver. And they didn't throw the ball a lot, but when they did, they were pretty effective. Bob Greasy was a good quarterback, had a good arm, but he's very bright. And first thing we had to do, we knew, was stop the run and force them into passing. And then they had Cornell Green. He was the man who was going to be responsible for Warfield if Warfield got loose on a pass route. And Cornell made one of the greatest saves, and nobody's ever really talked about it, but in that particular game, he actually turned around and twisted around and fell and got up and ran to the end zone. And the perfect pass, Greasy threw a perfect pass to Warfield, and I think Mel Renfro was covering and had him covered, but the pass was absolutely perfect. But Cornell jumped up probably 5 feet. He was a basketball player in college, and just barely touched the ball, and the ball wobbled and went off course, and Warfield didn't catch it. And that was, you know, early in the game, and it would have really been a big play for them. But we were making plays like that all day, and it was, you know, it ended up being a 24-3 game. But they really had a great football team. We watched them, and we were really kind of scared of them. I mean, it was a fear. It wasn't the fear like we're not going to go out there. It was a fear like we know what they can do, and everybody had to do their job. And I heard Coach Shula. I've got a CD, but he said after the game, when they interviewed him, he said, if you ever wanted to see a flawless game, he said, that was as close as you'll ever get. Watching the Cowboys today. He said they made no mistakes. And that's about what it amounted to.
And certainly one of the great thrills was, of course, carrying Coach Landry off the field with your teammates.
Well, I was actually under his seat. I was back there. The offensive linemen had him up front where everybody could see him, but the defensive guys were carrying him. Anyway, it was fun. He had the biggest grin. I'll never forget the next day in the paper. He had a huge grin on his face. And it really took a load off of all of us, because we had been called everything. I think everybody that ever wrote a book wrote something like next year's losers, or can't win the big one, or bridesmaids of the NFL, or something. You know, there were so many titles, and they were right. We'd been in the playoffs for about 7 years. Finally went to the Super Bowl the year before and lost it. So we were jinxed a little bit.
Certainly served as a great motivator. I have to ask, you know, we talk about Tom Landry as an NFL coach, but he played at the University of Texas. His last season at UT was in 1948, and then went on to a pro career with the New York Giants, winning an NFL championship in 56. Did he give you a hard time, Bob, with you being a TCU grad and product?
No, he didn't. He went, a lot of people don't know this, but I guess you probably do, but he was a pilot in the war. He went, I think he went his first 2 years, or maybe, yeah, 2 years to Texas, or maybe three. And then he went over as a 21-year-old pilot or 20-year-old pilot, and actually flew 30-something missions over Germany. Had two planes shot down. He had to ditch them. And anyway, he was, you know, quite a guy. I mean, to have done that. And then he actually was born again in 1959. That was the year before he came to Dallas. So he had become a Christian that year. He'd always gone to church. He said, I always went to church, but I never really knew, you know, what salvation was. And he said, I finally went to a full gospel business men's luncheon or something and heard about it. And he said, I realized that, that's what I wanted. And that's why whenever 1960 rolled around, 1961, when I came, that his priorities were changed. You know, they were different. And he was a wonderful dad, a wonderful husband, and a fabulous coach. And after we got through playing, I mean, he was never what you call very close to any of the players during our career. But boy, after you finished, he was like a dad, a second dad. You know, he was just nice as he could be and always wanting you to come and do something with him or play golf or do something. You know, just wonderful.
He treated you like a son, right, Bob?
Yeah, he really did.
Sharing some great stories as we relive Bob Lilly's illustrious career, of course, playing for the legendary coach, the great Tom Landry. It is interesting, Bob, you were sharing with me off air, I guess it was at training camp, you got to know another legendary coach, and that was John Wooden, right?
Yes, John, I think we went to, during my career, 12 or 13 years, we were in Thousand Oaks, and they had a gymnasium and a dressing room where we dressed out. It wasn't combined. The gymnasium was separate. But Coach Wooden was he had a boys' camp. He always had young boys from all over the valley there, and he obviously came from near L.A. But there were hundreds of little guys around, and they were staying in the dorms, and they were actually eating in the same cafeteria type building we were. And I got to know him right off the bat, and anyway, he was such a wonderful man, and I every year I look forward to seeing him. He was always out there a year during our training camp, and he and I talked many, many times. We ate a lot together, and he passed a lot of really good sayings and life thoughts, you know, to several of us. And I think Coach Landry and him became very good friends. They were both two very similar people. They really paid attention to detail. They were disciplinarians, but they were wonderful people. You know, there was no cursing and no shouting. And
well, that's true, because John Wooden, one of his quotes is, or his three golden rules were, be on time, don't cuss, and don't criticize your friends.
Yeah, that's about the way it was with Coach Landry. I mean, both people, they were just lovely people. And really, I think he taught us a lot. I mean, all the guys are out there, most of us got to know Coach Wooden, and he was just a wonderful man, and I think we've read about him last week when he passed away, all of his sayings and his, you know, the way and his players' comments on him. And he had, I'm sure, a similar influence on his college players as Coach Landry had on us. 98% of all my teammates have done very well after playing under Coach Landry. I mean, they almost all were successful in business. Almost all of them are successful as parents, and, you know, it's really amazing because so many of us live in Texas, and so many of them live in the Dallas area. It's wonderful that you have that many of your buddies that are still alive and still plowing ahead, you know, and making plans and doing things. And I think it rubbed off on all of us. Coach Landry did.
Let's put the calendar back and talk a little bit about growing up in the great state of Texas. You are from Throckmorton, Texas. You have to excuse me. I'm an Oklahoma gal, so kind of help me with my geography. Where is Throckmorton, Texas? And did you always have aspirations to play collegiate and then go on to the pro level with football?
No. Actually, when I was in high school, I was a pretty good athlete at a 1A school. It's about 115 miles due west of Fort Worth. You go to Jacksboro, and then you go on west of Jacksboro to Graham, and then from Graham it's about 30-something miles to Throckmorton. So it was a little town. We were in a 1A class, and we were voted into that. We didn't really have enough people, enough students. But, I knew I was a fairly good 1A football player, but we didn't get a whole lot of press because Abilene, Wichita Falls were the newspapers that we took, and the Star-Telegram, but they didn't mention Throckmorton a lot. And anyway, I did my junior year. I had a letter from Sammy Ball, who was coaching at the time over in Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene, and he sent me a letter and just told me that the next year they were going to be interested in offering me a scholarship if I had a good year in football. And at the end, he said, "P.S., you have to have pretty good grades to get in here," which kind of perked me up a little bit. I did a little better from that point on. I had really planned to join one of the services. I didn't know of any other way. We were poor. In Throckmorton, there was, when I look back on it, we didn't compare ourselves with anybody because we didn't have TV until I was a junior. And I would say that we were upper lower, you know, and there was no really upper. Mm-hmm. There might have been one family or so that was
right.
upper. So we didn't have any upper-uppers. We had some upper-lowers, and we had some upper-middles and some lower-middles. And then we had the upper-lower and the lower-lower. That was kind of the way I read it now that I look back on it. We were kind of in the middle of the lower-lowers. But my dad was crippled and really he could have worked for Lockheed. He had an opportunity, but he couldn't pass the physical.
And your daddy was your hero, right?
He is my hero, you bet. He worked with his leg was infected for his whole set well since he was 13. The femur was broken when he was young. He was run over. And Dr. Knight finally, our doctor at Cowboys finally did surgery on his leg to get the infection out of it. And he said, I had to chisel half his femur off and take the plate out. And
wow.
Said, I don't know how your dad lived that long. Anyway, he didn't live. He made it to 60, and that was it, but he was strong, and he was a good man, a wonderful man, wonderful dad.
We are so glad you're along with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. That's right, it's the audio biography of the great Bob Lilly, former Dallas Cowboy, NFL Hall of Famer, 14-year career with the Cowboys. You were just talking about slinging Sammy Baugh, of course, TCU and his time there. But talk about having the opportunity to play for head coach Abe Martin. And when did he first approach you and talk to you about potentially having the opportunity to play right here in Fort Worth?
Well, Aletha, there's another year in there that I left out, and that was my senior year. We had a drought in West Texas when I grew up, and we were in the custom farming, and Dad had bulldozers that he made the ponds with, and the dozed the mesquite trees down and dug the roads for the oil fields, and everything just kind of collapsed. And so we started calling family, and we found some of our family in Oregon that found Dad's job. So we actually moved to Oregon that summer after 56, the summer of 56. And I played my last year in sports in Pendleton, Oregon, which was a 4A school, which was the biggest class they had.
That's a beautiful part of the country. The topography is a whole lot different than Texas.
Yeah, we lived on the western side, so it was mainly ranching, and they did have forest, but not right in that area. Mostly it was wheat fields and ranchers, so it was kind of the same kind of people. And I really had a good coach there, and Coach Requa was my high school coach. But we were very successful. We went to the semifinals in football, basketball, and I went to the finals in track. And I did get some notoriety, and I did get a postcard from Coach Abe Martin at TCU. And I always said I'm the cheapest recruit they ever had, because it was a 1 cent postcard, and all I had to do was go buy one and send it back and say, yes, I'd like to come visit first, though. And so anyway, through the coach, we didn't have a phone at home. Through my coach's phone in his office, I got to talk to some of the coaches, you know, that were wanting to recruit me. And a friend of mine and I drove my dad's car all the way down to Fort Worth, and mother put in a bag of oranges and a whole bunch of pimento cheese sandwiches. And we drove straight through to my grandmother's. But anyway, I did sign the scholarship while I was down there, and I went back up to Oregon. Larry and I did. Larry Applegate was his name. And I drove back to Oregon and worked the rest of the summer in the pea factory and came back to TCU in that fall. And my parents stayed up there for a few months, and my dad had a heart attack, and they had to come back to Throckmorton. And he convalesced there. And anyway, it's been an interesting life. And I was very fortunate to play under a guy like Abe Martin. He was a wonderful man. He was sort of an extension of my dad, just like Coach Landry was. And I had wonderful teammates there at TCU when I was there. And we won the conference my sophomore year and tied for it my junior year.
Yeah, in 58.
And then we had two ties and two or three losses for 1 point or 2 points my senior year. So we really didn't have, we had 4-4-2, but we could have easily been, lost a game or two, it's still been tied for the conference again. Didn't work out.
I'm interested to know, because you had various offers from a number of institutions, Washington, Oregon State, Oregon, obviously you were living in that part of the country, Idaho, but even Texas A&M coach Bear Bryant offered you a football scholarship, and you didn't even go to College Station for a visit. What was it about TCU that allured you?
Well, it was the fact that when I was growing up, that was the only college my dad used to go, and he was a Sammy Baugh fan, and that was before me. But Sammy Baugh was already out of college by the time I was born. But he was my dad's hero, being from the area we grew up in. And so he used to go to TCU, and he got to know the guy that worked the gate. And my dad, you know, as I said, he was crippled, so he had a kind of a limp, quite a limp, really. And the guy, they called him Buster. My dad's his nickname was Buster. His real name was John. The guy would let him in. So when I got older, the guy would let my dad and me in the gate. And he said, y'all go find a seat. And he said, if somebody comes, you just get up. And there's plenty of seats. And there were. And so I watched several TCU games. I probably went to 7 or 8 of them during my childhood. And since Daddy loved Sammy Baugh and a lot of others, that was just where I wanted to go. You know, I'd never really totally planned to go to college until my senior year. And that's when I started going to visit colleges. And I thought, you know, I really did love TCU, and I mean, it's something that was in my blood, and that's where I went. Coach Bear Bryant called my coach, and I really didn't want to go to A&M because they didn't have any co-eds. Not that I ever had as many days. I didn't have a card load as a junior.
We could truly, Bob, go for another 40 minutes. We are quickly running out of time, but I do have to mention, of course, in 61, you were the first ever draft pick for the Cowboys. Your rookie season, boy, you got a hefty paycheck, Bob. You signed for $11,500 and got a $2,500 bonus. What did you go and do with that big paycheck?
Well, I actually had $9,000 of it left whenever the season was over, including taxes taken out. So I wasn't a spendthrift. I did buy a little Corvair out of that $2,500.
Yeah, that broke down. That was the reason, actually, you were late for practice, that first practice.
And anyway, Jack Williams, Chevrolet in Fort Worth, Mr. Williams, was kind enough. He took the car back. He said, and he gave me a Bel Air, I think it was. But anyway, it was a bigger car and a known car. And he didn't charge me a dime. It was about $500 more. So I really always appreciated that. And anyway, it turned out to be a good car. That one did. And I'm very grateful to Jack. He's gone now, but he was very nice to us.
We are going to have to come to a close. Of course, we've been visiting with the great Bob Lilly. In fact, he has a brand new book out. It is perfect for Father's Day. We want to encourage you guys to go out and get a copy of it. It is titled A Cowboy's Life. Bob Lilly, there's so many other stories. We didn't get to talk about all of your teammates and, of course, playing with Roger Staubach, who, of course, wrote the foreword in this particular book and also being inducted into the NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1980. So we will definitely have an open invitation. We look forward to catching up with you again, and we just wish you all a God's best, and please send our best to your Oklahoman, Miss Ann.
I will do that. Thank you.
We're going to step aside. We're going to be talking some Sooner baseball with Sonny Galloway here in just a moment. Stay close.